Good evening, church.
Good evening.
Tonight, I'll be reading 1 Samuel chapter 24, verses 1 through 7. After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, "David is in the desert of En-Gedi." So Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and set out to look for David and his men near the crags of the wild goats. He came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there. And Saul went in to relieve himself. David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, "This is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, 'I will give you your enemy into your hands for you to deal with as you wish.'" Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Afterward, David was conscience struck for having cut off a corner of his robe. He said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, or lift my hand against him, for he is the anointed of the Lord." With these words, David rebuked his men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way.
Thank you, Darren. What do you do when you're being pursued in an unrighteous way? What do you do when people say things about you that are not true, and there's no evidence, and yet most of the world believes what is said? It's hard to prove your innocence when you are innocent and there is no proof of your guilt. Tonight's story is the second story about David. Last week we looked at David and Goliath, and there were several of you that came and said, "I'm so grateful for the way you presented it. I'd not looked at it in that way." But tonight's lesson is a different lesson. There is the enemy without, that was last week, and this is the enemy that is within. It's hard to always do the right thing and sometimes to do nothing when the wrong thing is done to you, especially when that lasts for about a decade. Can you imagine being mistreated, being shot at by a spear, being hunted down like a dog, running for your life from your father-in-law, who is a mad king, and doing that for 10 years, give or take, without any sight at all to the end of the tunnel? We find ourselves in 1 Samuel chapter 24, where David has the opportunity to end all of this maddening that's going on. But before we get there, we want to take a look at Saul. We want to remember, we want to remind ourselves, Saul was not always a bad king. In fact, we begin in 1 Samuel chapter 10, where there is this man that stands head and shoulders above everybody else in Israel, and nobody knows it except Samuel, and Samuel anoints him king. And that story actually takes place in 1 Samuel 9, but we get to chapter 10 and verse 1. "Then Samuel took a flask of oil and poured it on Saul's head and kissed him, saying, 'Has not the Lord anointed you leader over his inheritance?'" So then, that was their first king. And this is the very first time that Israel will be satisfied with a giant of a Jew, in essence, standing head and shoulders above all else in Israel. Quite a strong man. But the problem with Saul wasn't his strength. The problem with Saul wasn't his height. The problem with Saul was Saul. course, none of us here have ever had that issue. Of course, my name's not Saul and yours isn't either. Turn to chapter 11. So Saul is made king. In chapter 11, not only does Samuel know that Saul is king, but now all of Israel confirms, accepts, and embraces Saul as their king. Chapter 11, beginning at verse 12. The people then said to Samuel, "Who was it that asked, 'Shall Saul reign over us?' Bring these men to us and we will put them to death." Evidently, they weren't completely favorable toward Saul. But Saul said, "No one shall be put to death this day, for this day the Lord has rescued Israel." Then Samuel said to the people, "Come, let us go to Gilgal and there reaffirm the kingship." So all the people went to Gilgal and confirmed Saul as king in the presence of the Lord. There they sacrificed fellowship offerings because the Lord and Saul and all the Israelites held a great celebration. So Saul begins by going out and doing some good things at first. But as is the trouble with some people who think about themselves and only themselves, at some point they have an eye problem. And I don't mean spelling E-Y-E. I mean capital I. And that was Saul. Saul had been given tasks to do. In chapter 13, verses 1 through 8, the Bible says Saul was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned over Israel 42 years. Perhaps some of that was way too long. But I drop down to verse 8, because there is a battle about to be fought, but as is the custom, Saul is to wait for Samuel to inquire of the Lord to burn the burnt offering. And Saul, like so many of us who have trouble waiting, who have trouble being patient. In verse 8, he waited 7 days, the time set by Samuel, but Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and Saul's men began to scatter. So he said, "Bring me the burnt offering and the fellowship offering." And Saul offered up the burnt offering. And just as he had finished making the offering, Samuel arrived, and Saul went out to greet him. "What have you done?" asked Samuel. Saul replied, "When I saw that the men were scattering and that you did not come at the set time and that the Philistines were assembling at Michmash, I thought, 'Now the Philistines will come down against me at Gilgal, and I have not sought the Lord's favor, so I felt compelled to offer the burnt offering.'" A king could never offer the offering. But this king did. And the sign, the understanding that God took from that event, it wasn't just that Saul made a mistake. This is not a mistake. This is rebellion. And whenever God's people get to a point where they know what the truth is, but they want to argue about it because somebody wants to be right and they want to show themselves to be smart, and they don't want to obey anymore, that's rebellion. And God doesn't want his people to be rebellious. If you need to go back in the Old Testament, read the story of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram again. Again. Because their charge against Moses is that, "Look, we're just as good as you are. Nobody appointed you to be leader of Israel. You have gone too far." That's what they said to Moses. And so there was a challenge, and the earth under the feet of Korah, Dathan, Abiram, their wives, their children, their tents, and their possessions, the earth opened up and swallowed them. God was showing, "Yes, I chose Moses." Well, at least from every indication we have from the book of 1 Samuel, God also helped choose Saul to be the first king. Now, in chapter 15, there are direct orders to Saul. Samuel said to Saul, "I am the one the Lord set to anoint you king over his people Israel. So now, listen to the message from the Lord." This is what the Lord Almighty says. I will punish the Amalekites for what they did to Israel when they waylaid them as they came up from Egypt. Now go, attack the Amalekites and totally destroy everything that belongs to them. Do not spare them. Put to death men and women, children and infants, cattle and sheep, camels and donkeys. So Saul summoned the men and mustered them at Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men from Judah. Saul went to the city of Amalek and set an ambush in the ravine. Then he said to the Kenites, go away, leave the Amalekites so that I do not destroy you along with them, for you showed kindness to all the Israelites and they came out of Egypt. So the Kenites moved away from the Amalekites. Then Saul attacked the Amalekites all the way from Havilah to Shur to the east of Egypt. He took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive, and all his people he totally destroyed with the sword. But Saul and the army spared Agag and the best of the sheep and cattle, the fat calves and the lambs, everything that was good. These they were unwilling to destroy completely, because everything that was despised and weak they totally destroyed. And so you know the rest of this story. Samuel comes looking for Saul. And he's told, well, Saul has gone to Carmel. And there he has built a monument to himself. So all of a sudden we begin to see the character of Saul. What was Saul about? He was about setting up a monument. He was about making himself a name for himself. He wasn't about obeying God. But in this chapter, we find that Saul has become rebellious. And so there is a discussion when Samuel comes. Because Saul goes out and says, I obeyed the Lord. And Samuel said, no, you didn't. And Saul said, yes, I did. And Samuel said, no, you didn't. And Saul said, yes, I did. And Samuel said, no, you didn't. What's the bleeding of this sheep? What's the lowing of this cattle? And what is this king doing here? And then Samuel said, to obey is better than sacrifice. He goes on to say, for rebellion is like the sin of divination and arrogance, like the evil of idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you as king. So at this point, Saul, in God's eyes and in Samuel's eyes, is no longer king, although he's still king. And at this point, we understand that God had already had Samuel say in chapter 14 that he was looking, chapter 13, that the Lord has already sought out a man after his own heart and has already made him king. Now, it hadn't physically happened until chapter 16, but God had already determined that, and so thus it would be so. So there you have Saul. Now, David, in chapter 16, he's the youngest of all of those sons of Jesse. And so Samuel goes to Bethlehem, to Jesse's house, to anoint a king. And after looking at all of them, and God telling Samuel, I don't look at the outside, I look at the heart. So where's the youngest son? And Samuel said, send for him. Halfway through verse 11 of chapter 16, we will not sit down until he arrives. So he sent and had him brought in. He was ruddy with the fine appearance and handsome features. And then the Lord said, rise and anoint him. He is the one. So Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came upon David in power. Samuel then went to Ramah. Now, this is before David ever killed Goliath. But at that point, David was king. We understand that. At that point, David was king. He was the rightful heir to the throne of Israel. And Saul wasn't. Sometimes the right thing doesn't always happen. You know, we like watching movies. I don't know about you, but I like watching movies where at the end, the good guy gets the girl and rides away on a white horse. Or a Ford truck. Same difference, if you ask me. I love stories that have a happy ending. But the problem with happy endings are they very seldom ever happen. And so this lesson tonight really is a lesson in not just in humility, because you see David running for his life for 10 years. And one of the things that Saul tries to trip him up with was giving his daughter Michal to him. Because Saul thought, well, I'll give Michal to him and that's going to trip him up. She must have been a chip off the old block, or something like a chip off the old block. But Michal didn't trip him up. But what we have is the story of shaping humility. See, sometimes, if we're looking closely, if we'll just realize, sometimes we realize that what God is doing in our lives when things aren't going quite so well, when we're going through some tough times, you know what God is trying to do? He's trying to shape humility. Because all of a sudden, we realize we're not in control. God's in control. And if we'll follow along with God, at the end of this, however long it takes, we will find ourselves being the humble people we ought to be. And that's this story. So the third thing, I know I didn't talk long about David, but I'm talking about the making of a godly king now. This is the third thing. 10 years of misery. Most of us wouldn't put up with that. 10 years of running and hiding. I don't know about you, but I probably would have said, stop and wait a minute. I'm the rightful king. My brothers, my dad, Samuel, they can testify, I'm the rightful king. But David didn't do that. In fact, as was read by Darren in the 7th verse of the 24th chapter, when David had the chance, David said, I will not raise my hand against. And he doesn't say a mad, evil, wicked king. He said, I will not raise my hand against the Lord's anointed. What does that tell you? That tells you something about the character and nature and growth of a giant killer. Because you see, early on in chapter 18, when David is going out and he's doing all these battles for Saul, Saul sends him out on the little things and then the big things. When they come back from battle, the women are saying, Saul has killed his thousands and David his tens of thousands. And Saul couldn't stand it. Chapter 18. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with tambourines and flutes. As they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. And Saul was very angry. This refrain galled him. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. And it's not very long after that, the next two verses tell us that one day David, who is in the ministry of Saul now and not tending sheep, as he is playing his harp, playing music that is sweet and soothing to Saul, an evil spirit or an injurious spirit comes upon Saul, and Saul has a spear in his hand. What kind of king sits around in his palace with a spear in his hand? The kind that wants to throw it. And there are at least two different occasions, if not three, where Saul takes the spear and he throws it at David. It says, the next day, an evil spirit, if you look at your footnote, it's an injurious spirit, from God came forcefully upon Saul while he was prophesying in his house while David was playing the harp, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand and he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. And there will be another occasion where that happens. So what do you do when somebody throws a spear? You learn to duck. And you say nothing. Because David said nothing. David didn't do anything. Now, most people would know how to pull the spear out of the wall and turn around and throw it back. But David understood the throne was not going to be his by violence. The throne was not going to be his by blood. The throne was going to be his when God determined it was going to be his. Period. And that's the end of that story. So then, in 1 Samuel chapter 19, Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan was very fond of David and warned him, "My father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there." And then look at chapter 19 and verse 10. Again, Saul tried to pin him with the spear. And the Bible says at the end of that verse, that night David made good his escape. And from then on, David is on the run and he's alone. Some of us might, if we're thinking that God allows this stuff to go on, some of us might think, "Are you there, God? Are you watching this, God? Do you understand, God, that I'm the Lord's anointed and this is going on?" But evidently David did. In fact, during this time, there is a psalm that is written, or at least that's what the heading says, the 57th Psalm. Is written during this time when David is running and hiding for his life. "Have mercy on me, O God, have mercy on me, for in you my soul takes refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster has passed. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He sends from heaven and saves me, rebuking those who hotly pursue me. God sends his love and his faithfulness. I am in the midst of lions. I lie among ravenous beasts, men whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. They spread a net for my feet. I was bowed down in my distress. They dug a pit in my path, but they have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God. My heart is steadfast. I will sing and make music." 10 years of misery, and he wasn't singing, "Gloom, despair, and agony on me, deep, dark depression, excessive misery. If it were for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all." Because, you see, that television show hadn't come on yet. Hee-haw was unknown to David. "I will praise you, O Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples, for great is your love reaching to the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth." And then we finally end in chapter 24, where we began today. And we find David in a position to do something about his misery, to do something about his grief. And beginning at verse 8 that was not read, "Then David went out to the cave and called out to Saul," went out of the cave and called out to Saul, "My lord, the king." When Saul looked behind him, David bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground. And he said to Saul, "Why did you listen when men said David has been on harming you? This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not lift my hand against my master because he is the Lord's anointed. So, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand. I cut off the corner of your robe but did not kill you. Now understand and recognize that I am not guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I have not wronged you, but you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between you and me. And may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you." As the old saying goes, from evildoers come evil deeds, so my hand will not touch you. You see, the story of David and Saul is a story of contrasts. It's a story of Saul being an outwardly strong man, but it's a story of David being an inwardly strong man. It's a story of Saul wanting to find some recognition And it's a story of David wanting to find redemption by God. And ultimately, it gets down to one thing. Pain, loneliness, humility, brokenness leads to a good king. A good, godly king. And until Saul and his son are killed, David would not raise his hand. See, David was the greatest king of Israel until Jesus came. He ruled over a righteous Israel. He never forgot who God was, even though there was a lapse in judgment. We'll talk about David and Bathsheba on another occasion. But tonight it's David and Saul. And you might ask yourselves this question, which one am I? Because you see, all of us in one way or another are a leader of men. Am I a man like Saul or am I a man like David? I want to be like David. I don't want to be a Saul. But do you know what that means? It means loneliness. It means pain. It means heartache. And it means brokenness. Because when we're at that point, God can use us. Then God can use us. One of the names for God is Father. Our God, our Father. And that word is the word potter. We get our word P-O-T-T-E-R from the word pater, which in the Greek is spelled P-A-T-E-I-R, pater. God is our potter. And He will use us and He will form us and He will shape us. We may not like the process, but if we'll allow God to work in our lives, we'll be a king like David. We'll be godly men like David and not like Saul. Because you see, Saul was rebellious and God cannot use. God, let me say it again. God cannot, will not, shall not use a rebellious man leading His righteous people. So here we are tonight. Hopefully we're on the road to humility. And sometimes it's going to get ugly. But along the way, if we cannot sing praises to God, we do not have the right attitude yet. David was singing praises to God while he was being pursued. And he said, I will not raise my hand against the Lord's anointed. Thank God that Jesus Christ is the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, and that He was raised up to wash our sins away and to cleanse us from all our wickedness and guilt, and to bring us to a point where we can become more like Jesus. And that happens in the ugly realm of life. Loneliness, being pursued unrighteously, being in pain, and brokenness. If you're here this evening and you're going through something like that, just remember, God is with you. He does not allow us to go through that by ourselves if we are faithful. Glad you're here tonight. Maybe there's someone here who's going through the troubles and has not named God as their God, has not been baptized into Christ for the remission of sins, to be added to the Lord's church by God Himself, and to receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. We can assist you with that tonight. Folks, we're all on the road to heaven. And sometimes we got to go through trials and difficulties. Let God work in your life and you'll make it. If you have a need, we can pray for you. Come while we stand and sing.